From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Well, the Trump administration causing chaos and confusion this week when it tried to put a hold on spending federal funds that were already appropriated. Illinois and several other states went to court to block the move, but is that money still in jeopardy? We also watched as immigration authorities conducted raids in the Chicago area. And when President Trump got political in his comments after the deadly plane and helicopter crash in Washington this week, Governor Pritzker said he was unfit to hold the office. Just another week in government and politics, right? We'll talk about it coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Professor Emeritus and former Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. And Charlie's also been a longtime State House reporter and observer. Our guest this week, Amanda Vinicky with WTTW's Chicago Tonight. Amanda, always good to have you back with us.
And I love being with you, Sean and Charlie.
Now, before we go any further, let me point out the racketeering conspiracy case against former Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan and his co-defendant Mike McLean has gone to the jury. No verdict yet as we sit down to record this show, but we will talk about that when it does occur and likely, possibly, next week. But first, Amanda, it's been a busy week, so let's talk Trump. I said there was a lot of chaos and confusion over this federal money. What happened there, and who was impacted by this?
I mean, the impact is so wide-ranging, and what it gets back to is the president's management, her budget management office, issued a memo calling for a freeze in a lot of the spending that goes to states, that goes to municipalities, that goes to nonprofits, and really highlighting that this was because he wanted federal agencies to go through and check whether those grants were used for anything that was cross-purposes with the various executive orders issued by President Trump that are really sort of anti-anything in support of immigration, in support of renewable energy, in support of what they call gender ideology. And so anything that is in support of, say, transgender individuals. And so this memo was issued. People really, it caused chaos because you have programs, be it universities that are in the midst of research, Head Start programs that need these dollars in order to function, in order to pay their staff, in order to pay their rent. I mean, any facet, really, of most facets, that is, of state spending, this didn't affect, say, Social Security checks. But beyond that, it really was wide-ranging, and there was no clear directive as to what programs were not included because there were so many that were part of this. It did cause such a panic and really a sort of backlash that the memo was rescinded, but the purpose is still there. And so the White House says that no, it is still planning to undergo this incredibly thorough review of spending that it believes is a waste of taxpayer dollars. And then we don't know what that means. And there is, in fact, multiple lawsuits, but one of them that is going forward, Illinois is party to, along with other Democratic-led states that allege that this is illegal and that in part because Congress has allocated these dollars. And so we're going to wait to see. But I think really, Sean, at this point, you know, although maybe the panic has subsided, there still are some immense questions and very good reasons to perhaps no longer be in a total state of chaos, but very much to be questioning where things go from here because the impact is so very widespread.
Yeah, Charlie, we've seen, you know, programs get rescinded at some point or some changes occurred, but I've not seen anything on this scale. And especially involving the federal government, because states' budgets, local governments are sometimes put together based on, you know, what's already been appropriated, what's already been approved in a budget. So if you can't count on that, that's really hard to try to put something together here at this level. But have you ever seen anything quite like this?
And I've been watching this stuff for a very long time, and I can't remember the federal government ever saying, we're going to stop all these programs while we review them with an ideological lens to make sure that they all comport with what Donald Trump's ideas of a great society are. And it's unprecedented, and it calls into question. And here I'll quote from Kwame Raoul, who was one of the Democratic attorneys general who filed a lawsuit that ultimately got the funding freeze put on hold. And he says, on January 20th, our nation had a peaceful transfer of power. But let's be clear, it was an inauguration, not a coronation. Congress is given the power to appropriate the funding. The executive branch cannot unilaterally disregard those appropriations passed by a separate and equal house of government. And so the argument is, it's a question of constitutional power. Can the federal government impound money and on such a scale, or even for any particular program, without some good reason? And the precedent, as I understand it, is there have been prior cases, one involving Richard Nixon, that said, no, Congress appropriates, and the federal government, the president can't say, well, the Congress, a separate branch, equal branch of government, has said, we are going to support this effort. And the president can't say, no, I don't like it, so I'm not going to let the money go out. And it was interesting because the Trump's acting budget director wrote a memo that they sent out for the freeze. And I'll quote here, the use of federal resources to advance Marxist equity, transgenderism, and Green New Deal social engineering policies is a waste of taxpayers' dollars that does not improve the day-to-day lives of those we serve. This memorandum requires federal agencies to identify and review all federal financial assistance programs and supporting activities consistent with the president's policies and requirements. And I would argue that going forward for the next year's budget, fine, the president can say, well, I'm not going to fund any climate change stuff. I'm not going to fund anything that's going to help transgender individuals or people who don't conform to my notion of what a great American is. And that's fine. Put it in the budget. But you can't arbitrarily say, we're not going to fund Head Start, because some of the people who might participate in Head Start, those kids aren't U.S. citizens. And I think that's what the courts are going to wind up saying. Going forward, you can be as cruel and draconian and as mean-spirited as you want, but what's done is done, and you can't step in and stop it. That would be my obviously non-legal opinion.
Yeah, you know, I look at government and I always think about it from the local on up, and state, and you know, of course, at Congress level, you have state reps and you have your senators, and to me, they are closer to the ground on what's happening and what people want in their state or in their districts than, say, the president. And that, to me, has always been the point of this, of having this separation of powers. But we have seen this at the state level, too, Amanda. We saw Rod Blagojevich try to hold back some funding at times and different things. We've certainly saw Bruce Rauner try to implement his way of thinking over the legislature. It hasn't proved successful at the state level for those chief executives. Do you think it may prove more successful for Donald Trump?
It really is reminiscent of those times. And I'll add, by the way, that adding to the sort of unprecedented nature of this is that the memo was issued on the 27th, and it was to take effect the very next day, this temporary pause. And then just a very short period, these federal agencies were supposed to send by early February, so really a couple of weeks, their findings of all of this. And so that added to the calamitous nature for organizations. And on top of it as well, I would say, is that the very issues that Trump is calling attention to and has problems with are, of course, priorities during the Biden administration. So when you have entities, be it local governments or the state of Illinois, trying to get federal money, they write it trying to appease the administration, trying to get that money. And now the very ways that they prioritized receiving federal dollars are now what they're going to be punished for. So that's part of it here. What the future holds, I think it's really hard to say, Sean, in part because there are these lawsuits that are carrying forward. I was able to watch Rhode Island, actually. This was in the federal court there. It was, you know, aired on YouTube for the sake of transparency, which, let me tell you, is really a refreshing take for the judicial system in ways. And so was able to watch that hearing where attorneys general argued that even though the memo itself was recalled, that this is an issue that remains a priority and that they believe the courts need to weigh in on. So I think that's going to be part of it. You also are going to have, as you noted, John, members of Congress who are hearing from nonprofits in their districts that might have universities. This is one where you can look at it and say you have a 5-year program. We're 3 years in. You want to talk about a waste of taxpayer money? You might not agree with this program, but flushing all of that down the toilet because of a pause or suddenly pulling the plug might be a greater waste of taxpayer money. I'm not sure how much those arguments are going to hold sway with the Trump administration and the Republicans who control Congress and have very much aligned with him. That might say, you know, this is why we were elected, to sort of upset the tables, or whether they're going to say, all right, no. We see on the ground that this is manifesting in a way different than a sort of press release or just a memo, because who is opposed to taxpayer trying to be protective of the taxpayer dollars? Nobody. It's just, again, how that manifests on the ground. I think that those are questions that are sort of too early, Sean, but this is one of the many tests that we're likely to see throughout the Trump administration.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody has a problem with, like I said, a review of spending or, you know, taking a closer look. Both parties, have spent their share of taxpayer dollars through the years, maybe unquestionable things. But Charlie, I don't think people understand here, like, let's say the state of Illinois, but really any state, I don't think people understand just how much money comes into from the federal government, how it helps fund different programs. Some of those are safety programs. We're not just talking about, you know, pet projects here and there, but a lot of that money flows into these states. If that money was tied up and completely tied up, that is going to be a problem.
Yeah, there are any number of programs that get substantial federal funding. Medicaid, for example, the program that helps pay for health care costs for low-income people, people with disabilities. The state gets roughly 50 cents back for every dollar it spends. That's been the historic ratio for, Lord, forever. And so that is a pretty big chunk of money. And if the state were to lose that, or to lose some of the other money that's sent for things like Head Start or things for transportation programs, we'd be in a world of hurt. As a matter of fact, just earlier, we're recording this on Friday morning, and earlier, the Trump's transportation secretary sent out a memo directing staff to give preference to communities with marriage and birth rates higher than the national average. Now, we're a little bit below the national average. So that's another area where Illinois, if we suddenly decide we're going to look at sort of how's your population increasing to decide where we're going to allocate money for interstate highways or mass transit, things like that, that's going to be another potential blow to us. As I said earlier, the Trump administration can be as tight-fisted as they want, and they can impose programs that they don't think are true American. You know, for example, saying that, well, we're not going to give food stamps to people who are not U.S. citizens. They can do that going forward. They'll be challenged in court, I'm sure. And that's an argument that we've got to expect is going to be coming, you know, in next years. For one thing, there was a story earlier this week where Republicans, in terms of putting together a budget for next year, are talking about cutting the Affordable Care Act's Medicaid expansion. which basically increased enrollment for the program. And that would cut, by cutting the Affordable Care Act Medicaid expansion, it would save a ton of money for the federal government, but increase the cost for states. And in Illinois, it could mean more than 900,000 Illinoisans would lose their health coverage, according to the U.S. Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. And the idea is the Republicans are trying to figure out what social programs can we cut for next year's federal budget to be able to afford the humongous tax cuts we want to give to the super wealthy, which kind of tells you where the Republican mindset is.
Amanda, I think before we move off of this topic, too, we talked about Congress. You know, is Congress going to kind of stand up and say, hey, we're going to get pretty territorial at times on things like this? But I always look back to my favorite punching bag, which is the redistricting process in a lot of these states, including Illinois. And you have people who their only concern is the primary in many cases. So members of Congress, for example, you know, Darren LaHood's probably not going to get beat in his district. Mike Bost is not going to get beat by Democrats. They could get beat in a tough primary race. So they are more concerned about, you know, keeping Donald Trump happy, you know, going along with what the people, the Republican voters who support Donald Trump say they want. They don't want that hard right challenge. And that seems to me to also play into this of whether or not Congress decides to, you know, step up and show some backbone in this.
And so I think that you're very right. And this is the sort of polarization that we have seen play out in much of politics. We are seeing it play out in the state level in Illinois. By the way, just this week, you have House Republicans filing a lawsuit alleging that the map that is currently in place in Illinois is illegal and that they have no chance of winning. And you have these districts that are very much drawn to the advantage of one party or another. And so I think that is part of it. And it's just sort of we're in a new world. It's partially what you talked about, Sean. I think that it is also a new climate in Washington. And we don't know how many Republicans in particular, even as we talked about, might have problems or see on the ground the issues with some of Trump's actions, are really going to be willing to fight back at that because they have seen there will be a competition from the right, that they could lose support from the party and its leaders.
Well, let's turn our attention to immigration, because when we sat down to record, Charlie, last week, they had not, at least anything widespread, any type of immigration raids that we had seen broadcast in the Chicago area. Things got a little more active as the weekend went along. In fact, even strangely enough, of course, you had Tom Homan there, the so-called border czar, but you also had Dr. Phil, the TV personality who was on the scene as well. It had a very almost reality TV feel from what I was watching. But the bottom line is the Trump administration had promised that they were going to do these roundups and mass deportations. It looks like that has started.
Yeah, and it appears that way. And it's had some impact in terms of a couple areas, for example, that it's really shown up. Business in some the heavily Latin neighborhoods of Chicago is really bad. The Chicago Police Department reported roughly 100 people have been detained by Immigration and Customs Enforcement, but it's not clear how many of these folks had criminal records. And apparently, the way it works is the city is saying if there's somebody out there who's not a U.S. citizen and has committed a serious crime, yeah, get rid of them, pick them up and take them away. But the federal government defines criminal acts as if you cross the border without authorization, you have committed a crime. Therefore, by definition, all the immigrants, according to the federal folks, are criminals. Therefore, we can pick up anybody. And they've done that. They've taken some people who it's really very questionable what their offense might have been. And so as a result, as I said, the business communities are suffering. In the Little Village area, for example, which is a basically Mexican-American neighborhood on the west side of Chicago, the executive director of the Chamber of Commerce, Jennifer Aguilar, said that they're doing what they can to mobilize and protect the community. And she says, quote, people expected maybe branded ICE trucks. And now we're seeing that it's all sorts of federal law enforcement showing up in cars that have tinted windows. So it's just new tactics that are being used that we didn't expect. In the last couple of weeks, the stretch of 26th Street in Little Village, the city's second busiest business corridor, has been a ghost town. In another neighborhood, the Back of the Yards neighborhood, people are not coming and shopping. The restaurants, apparently the Chicago restaurants, according to information from Chicago, roughly 80% of their workforce are immigrants. Restaurant owners have changed their protocols so that instead of when you come in for work, instead of discussing what the night's specials are, instead they've been using the time to update employees on their rights and discuss the latest ICE activity. And it's also had an impact on Chicago schools. The Chalkbeat newsletter talked about on the north side, a Spanish-speaking teacher persuaded a nervous migrant mother to let her son come back to school. In another area, a majority Latino neighborhood on the city's southwest side, an elementary school principal has been sharing his experience as an immigrant so that families feel more comfortable. In Pilsen, a high school launched an emergency immigration chat and told parents that it's okay for students with immigration concerns to stay home. And so the ripple effect is affecting the restaurant industry, the business industry in heavily Hispanic neighborhoods, schools. So it's really disrupting daily life in a lot of these areas, and people are very afraid.
And Amanda, that's what you're seeing up there as well?
Yeah, you know, I think that something to keep in mind is that this is there's really a void of information. There was this very public sort of exercise by Trump's, quote, immigration czar, accompanied by once of Oprah fame, Dr. Phil, now somebody who is, you know, sort of aligned with the MAGA movement and who was part of you know, and so aligned with Trump, spoke at the RNC, I believe. And so that was very public, of course. This videotaping, really, of individuals being seized who Czar Homan, I'll call him, has characterized as criminal in nature. And yet, for all of that, we don't know precisely who was taken. We don't know why. The figure given by the Chicago police superintendent is 100 individuals, and that's not, from what I gather, very out of step with previous enforcement by ICE. Again, however, this is very public. We don't know why these individuals were the ones who were detained, who will be presumably forced out of the United States, and whether they had criminal records. So there are, I think that's adding to the sort of confusion and the public pressure and the fears by those who are undocumented, because although there is supposedly a priority for individuals who are who have criminal records, we don't quite know what that means on the ground.
Well, only about a minute left here, Amanda. Give us a quick overview of legislation that's been proposed that would deal with reparations in the state of Illinois. This has now been unveiled.
Well, so in the wake of George Floyd's murder, anybody I'm sure recalls that the Black Caucus really seized on the call for change and passed what they called four pillars, and much of that having to do, of course, with criminal justice, but not solely that. And so a essentially a reparations commission was created. That's still at work. In fact, has a hearing coming up in early February in the Chicago suburbs. But one of the stated goals and really laid out in legislation that this commission was responsible for was coming up with something for redress for reparations. And so this is legislation that would require any business that wants to do business with the state as part of their bid when they submit to get a contract would have to declare whether they have any ties really to slavery, whether they profited from the slave trade, and if so, including as part of that bid, a monetary payment that would go into a state fund that would be used to, we don't quite know, that's not exactly spelled out, but that would be dedicated toward efforts in areas where that are economically depressed.
Well, we'll watch for that as the session moves along. Let's go now to our notes from the field, and Charlie, we'll start with you this week.
All righty. Well, there was an interesting little spat that developed over the week between Elon Musk and Governor Pritzker. And it kind of began when Musk retweeted a video of Pritzker at a news conference where he said he would stand up against policies from President Donald Trump that he believes harm Illinois residents. And Pritzker's quote was, "When it comes to threats to our freedom, health, or security, if you come for my people, you come through me." And this was a couple of weeks ago. And so Musk retweeted this, and he added a caption saying, "Nothing is more dangerous than getting between J.B. Pritzker and the buffet table," obviously making a dig at the governor's weight. And so Pritzker responded by posting a picture of himself eating at the Wiener Circle, which is a well-known Chicago hot dog spot. And his caption to his picture said, "I salute the Wiener Circle, not Nazis." And so that was a clear reference to Musk's gesture at a Trump inaugural rally, which some people compared to a Nazi salute. So I thought that was pretty clever of the governor, showing that he's for all of the nonsense going on, he's got a pretty good sense of humor.
All right. Well, let's move on to Amanda, your note from the field.
You know, why don't we just sort of stick with this theme, because I do think that this gets to a serious point, and that is that Governor Pritzker clearly had a national profile previously when he was in the running to be a running mate of Democratic nominee Kamala Harris. He's still very much trying to get out in front, raise that profile, be it because of future political aspirations or because he is truly offended by what is going on in the Trump administration and wants to fight it. So after this tragedy of a helicopter plane crash that has left 67 individuals dead this week, the governor and you had President Trump blaming DEI initiatives from the Biden and Obama administrations, Pritzker saying that he needs to care about this because so many flights in and out of Chicago's O'Hare and Midway airports, that he believes that this shows that Trump is, quote, unfit to lead during moments of crisis, given those DEI comments and asking serious questions about the Federal Aviation Administration under Trump, which was, like many others in federal government, at least temporarily hollowed out.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have for this episode of State Week, and our panel included Charlie Wheeler and Amanda Vinicky with Chicago Tonight. Look for State Week where you get your podcasts through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford. Join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.